Welcome to the Department of Homeland Security, the officially unofficial podcast for The Boys on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about season two, episode six, The Bloody Doors Off. I think I know what this is about. It's probably one of those double entendre, dual meaning kind of titles, because they literally blow some doors off this episode. But also,
I do.
They're trying to blow the doors off this plot, right? This Vought plot. And they're not getting too much of a point here. You know, the Lamplighter clues them in a little bit, but still got a long way to go to uncover this thing.
Yeah, no. Lots of doors got blown off. I was trying to think of like what exactly this meant, because, you know, blowing the doors off something usually refers to like being beat in a race. I always think of that, yeah. Like, oh, I blew the doors off somebody. Blowing the lid off something's more of a revelation of plot,
right?
But also,
what is
like,
a door,
there's really
not just a vertical lid, horizontal lid.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone's doors got blown off. Like, doors got ripped off and crushed by what's her name, Cindy.
Uh-huh.
But I otherwise, yeah, I don't know. But a lot of these titles have been kind of loosey-goosey, mystifying.
Yeah, every title feels like it's being written by Butcher, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. It does. But also, I caught him using a piece of like Australian slang when he says have a gecko. I thought that was going to be some kind of Cockney rhyming slang, that it's like, you know, you roll that through a couple different translations and it rhymes something, eventually rhymes with hook, you know, like Barney, you're in Barney, sure. Barney Rubble, trouble. But it turns out, I guess it's like an Australian thing for like geckos having those weird eyes and like having like a real intense look at something is having a gecko. So what the fuck, Butcher?
Yeah. Pick a nationality. Are you New Zealander?
Yeah,
are you British? Are you Australian? What are you?
Pick a lane, man. I'm having a hard time keeping up what type of English speaking white dude you are.
What do you think of this episode? For the CIA? I mean, it's, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Is he even FBI my ass? He's not even American. What do you think of this episode?
I love this episode. I thought it was great. I'm intensely curious with how they're going to deal with the Homelander situation that is brewing. And this just like kicks it into a whole nother level, like with Stormfront's involvement with him. God, it's not going to go good places from here.
And I like how, you know, last episode they rounded out Mother's Milk's character the last two episodes. And this episode, we finally got some real solid development for Frenchie. Like, what is making him tick? Why is he so fucking crazy? Why is he involved with drugs? And those answers I found were mostly satisfying.
Yeah,
I even liked
Sherry? That question that we've had for the last couple episodes has been answered.
Yep. Yep. I thought there was some interesting stuff about what Vought's up to at their little research facility. It had nothing to do with some kind of super secret racist organization of wealthy and elites meeting in the Redwoods of California. So
yeah.
Swing and a whiff on that. But what they did come up with, like, there was some really interesting and disgusting and amazing weird misfire superpowers going on in that facility, which was a lot of fun. And even seeing stuff like Starlight and Butcher come up with a relationship that's not, you know, dependent on like Huey, it feels like slowly we're morphing into an actual team rather than just a bunch of random cool people who some of us used to know and some of us know. Like, it feels like it's becoming more of an integrated group, and I like that.
And we've talked about, you know, how we think there's going to be this division between like previous Seven working with the Boys and Homelander's new version of the Seven and how they might clash. It seems like they're building toward that with, you know, Maeve and A-Train and the Deep all kind of coming together. You know, will Starlight be able to bring them over effectively to the Boys? I have no idea, but we'll see. The other thing that you did call, you know, maybe, okay, we're not up on everything, but you did kind of call that they would find the plane wreckage, right, from the Homelander incident, where he lasered that plane in half and killed those people, and they would use this to somehow further the plot that Maeve has to take him down.
Well, I felt like that was a little bit swing and a miss because, like, I think what they found is as a GoPro from someone who was filming the jetliner that went down to him and Maeve on, not the one that he lasered that had the mayor or whatever. But it's pretty much,
yeah. I thought you meant the jet.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the jet that they lasered and left all those people to die in.
No. The one that and that was more of like Homelander could have probably saved it. He just chose not to because it would be more effective to blame it on Super Terror and get, you know. So, but it's still, yeah, the Deep came up with some plane wreckage. I'll take partial credit for that.
Sure. I think it's deserved.
Yeah, and I did afterwards go back. I'm like, was I inventing that? But like, no, Madeline came to him and said something about the Deep finding some wreckage. So like that all checked out. But yeah, no, and I also think from a psychological standpoint, it's very interesting that Stormfront is essentially the real version of what Madeline was just playing at. Like, Stormlander's got this mommy Oedipus complex about mother figures, and she is revealed quite literally to be his mother. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, quite metaphorically, literally. Yeah. His mother, she's the wife of the man who created the and then it's like all this kind of weird incestual family dynamics. It seems like it, for whatever reason, really fascinates Homelander in a sexual way, that it's like mother, sister, wife, kind of all it's really getting his milk salivary glands flowing.
Great. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like. So they've managed to somehow bring me around to the side of the Shining Light organization. Like, if you've got a superpowered corporation that's trying to cause a race war here and take you out, what's your recourse? It's to create your own fucking soups and fight them, right? Like, and their methods may not be the best, but you know they've got to do what they got to do.
It's I think we're struggling with a lot of that right now in present day America. Is like, you know, it's very hard to decide morally and ethically where you stand on something until you decide, like, out of all the multiple causes, what are they fighting for? Mm-hmm. And then where do you stand on the by any means necessary rhetoric? Like, if there is evil to be oppressed, is there a limit to which you will not stoop to suppress that evil? And your answers to those two questions tell a lot about where you're going to stand on different issues. And you're right. Like, you know, it's like the other show, like Raised by Wolves, that's Ridley Scott, is also dealing with, like, you know, is child soldiers cool if you're standing in the way of, like, and not, who knows? You pray never to be put in those type of situations. But
yeah, and it kind of depends on how powerful the other side is as well. Like, you might need to resort to extreme measures to deal with somebody who's extremely powerful.
Yes. So, but I think all this stuff is very fascinating, and it's wild that we only have, what, two more episodes left? Like, it feels like there's so much ground left to cover, but if you look back, we've covered a lot of ground, too, so.
Yeah, we sure have. And they're really pointing this in an interesting direction. I'm super excited for the next two.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, let's get into the recap. We start off with a flashback. 8 years ago, Frenchie is hanging out with Sherry, warming up for a bank robbery with a conversation about Golden Girls. And also, I don't know his other friend's name, but he's there as well.
I don't either. Yeah. Some dude who's going to DOA before he's relevant to the plot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess his DOA is relevant to the plot. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love how they introduced the Golden Girls, which is weirdly culturally relevant. Like, people have rediscovered the Golden Girls as a comfort food of television. It's like something their grandmas like to watch, their moms like to watch. But I've heard from multiple people I respect that show fucking holds up and is having a renaissance now in streaming. And the way they brought it back at the end of the episode after I'd kind of forgotten the conversation is one of the reasons I love this show. Yeah.
And Golden Girls has a bit of a reputation, as far as I'm aware, because I haven't seen much, if any, of the Golden Girls. For, you know, at least one of the characters has like a semi-foul, you know, foul for network television kind of mouth, take no shit from anybody kind of vibe to her.
Right.
I don't know which one it is, but, you know, in the context of The Boys, which is this over-the-top sort of in-your-face, gory and violent thing, I feel like there's some commonality there, like just the slightest bit of it.
Yeah, it's subversive, the fact that you had these old women. I think you're I can't really tell if you're talking about Blanche.
I don't know their names.
Or Dorothy's mom. Because the old one. She's like had the really sharp acid tongue.
Yeah.
But Blanche was just like a Golden Girl hoe, man. She was like all right. Like that. This was very subversive, the idea that your grandparents are like having an active sex life and courting men like Dick Van Dyke and whatnot. Like, I remember that was one of the ones I think the dude she dated. So like Golden Girls were the boys of the time.
Sure. That sounds right to me.
Yeah, no problem. Betty White. Also, that's the other thing. Betty White played super Snow White and Innocent in that show. She's real life pretty blue.
Yeah. She also blew up a whale, ran a boat right through a whale in that show.
Damn, did not know that fact. But if you want to see her square off against giant alligators, check out Lake Placid. She's delightful.
Right. Okay, so Frenchie removes, we're back in modern day, Frenchie removes Annie's chip with a rotary tool. Has a little trouble getting through her skin, which this is just, you know, another one of those generic superhero traits, right? The super resistance. And this is something that I always wonder about in superhero stories. Like, if you've got somebody who can jump 100 feet into the air, the muscles in their legs have to be structured that they can support that kind of movement and that kind of
you know, force. And the bones in their body need to be denser and stronger. And it seems like they're leaning into that with the boys.
Yeah. Like, that's always like a Superman trope, you know? Superman's dying because he got exposed to kryptonite, and this, you know, he's getting better when the doctors try to stick him with the needle, and the needle just kind of, he's got his invulnerability. You know, if Superman gets colorectal cancer, what do they got to do? They got to go in there with like Kryptonian scalpels to resection his bowel?
Absolutely.
Superman with the colostomy bag? Is that what we're... No, I thought it was like nice. He's got this like diamond wheel cutter and he's going at it just to get just this tiniest little bit of incision.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if they could have even chipped like Homelander or Translucent, right? Like, how do you chip Translucent without it coming back out? Like, have him swallow something, but then it just works its way through him.
That's a damn fine question. How did they? They must have chipped Homelander at some point.
Yeah, I mean, he's... I guess you could chip them before they become Supes, right?
I guess that's... Yeah, before... While they're still a baby, you put the chip in at that point.
Yeah.
Or I wonder if, like, you could also instill some kind of port when they're a child, so you can, like, if you can access it and renew it if you need to. But, now that would be interesting. And is the... When I was watching this, I felt like the show, and sometimes the show does this, it doesn't give a moment as much weight as I thought, and then it turns out that, like, you know, there wasn't that much weight behind it. But it feels like her taking her tracking chip out is her going rogue. Yeah. Like, she can't just go back to the Seven at this point, right?
I don't think so.
Hey, half of us all, at least medium or more, suspect you of playing fast and loose with this Compound V revelation, and now you've taken your tracking chip out. We just want to talk, Starlight. I think this is kind of like her joining the boys, but it didn't feel like that big of a moment for some reason. So I don't know whether they're going to explain this away at some point, or she's going to keep the tracker in her pocket and just kind of like keep track. Plus the fact that they did this in their underground lair, they removed a tracking chip in the location of their hideout. That seems kind of crazy too, but...
Yeah, they maybe needed just like a quick conversation between, like, you know, the argument that Huey and Butcher are going to have over Annie being part of this in the first place, have it before they de-chip her. And that way it tells us, like, okay, it makes it more of a moment, right? When they actually decide to do it.
No, I agree. But I think that Boyce sometimes plays fast and loose with the little details. Yeah. So I'm not sure if we're supposed to, if I'm understanding this correctly, or if this is actually going to be something to where, you know, she can still slip back in and out of the Seven at will.
All right. Homelander and Stormfront stop someone from committing a crime. Unfortunately, instead of taking him to the police, they decide to murder him and then get it on essentially in his remains. This relationship has escalated quickly. Like, Stormfront last episode, you know, they do the laser my tits and they bang and all that, but like, man, they've just gone straight to the, oh, this relationship is just entirely based on how fucked up these characters are. I thought the murder bang was like a third date kind of thing.
Like, yeah, no, they're fucking. I mean, it's like she's giving like an over the costume handy when he crushes the dude's face, and then they're just fucking over his corpse, and then they're making out, and they're like bits of his brain matter and blood are running down their faces, and it's it felt vampiric. It felt like something that goes on in like a Bram Stoker type of. Yeah. I mean, it paints him as like, you know, because like vampires, attractive, glamorous monsters. It does paint them both as monstrous in this. But I do like how they subvert kind of like one of my favorite things about Superman is like when he just shows up to stop petty crime. Like there's that scene in the first Richard Donner Superman where like guys are robbing a boat and he just kind of goes there and is kind of fucking with them because what can they do? Like a dude hits him with a crowbar and it bends over his head and is like hurting and it's like vibrating. And Superman's like, bad vibrations, friend. And, you know, he just got to lift him off the boat and drop him off the police station. Like there's like, it's like a finger of God coming down and doing something to you. And it's like very wholesome and fun because Superman would never hurt these guys. And this Superman crushes a dude's skull. Why he's getting a handy. What a guy.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Before we go off the scene, though, someone mentioned to us last week, I believe, or maybe it was during our live watch on Sci-Fi Sundays. Every Sunday on Twitch.tv, we culminate with watching the this week's episode of The Boys. They asked us if we knew that, like, Stormfront was gender bent from the comics. Apparently, she's a dude in the comics.
Huh. No, I didn't know that.
And now that they are fucking, I'm really wondering if that plot was in the comics. And it kind of goes in line with our feedback from last week about the boys pulling their punches. Like, surely they are not so squeamish that they can't have two super dudes fucking. I mean, I will say that, like, that's one that seems like a bright, like, even HBO has trouble showing a male phallus, you know, let alone one erect. But I don't know, like, a couple years ago on American Gods, they had a pretty graphic male on male sex scene between a genie and a cab driver of all people. I'm just like, I don't know.
Genie on male. That wasn't male on male.
It's true. It's a mythical being with a very masculine presentation,
right?
Fucking a human dude driving a cab. But I do wonder, like, if they shifted Stormfront to be a woman just so they could avoid two super dudes pile driving each other. I'm going to give a little bit more weight to that last week's email about, like, is this show just kind of like, you know, getting its edgy stuff on, but then, like, oh god, you know, dudes having sex, can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Gonna have to check it out. Don't know. Don't tell me. Don't want any spoilers just yet. So,
all right, Butcher and Kimiko watch Homelander and Stormfront interact on TV and realize that they're banging. The other boys show up with Annie and give her a tour of the hideout. She gets a hug from Kimiko and she gets the side eye from Butcher. Annie tells the boys that Stan Egger is close to a breakthrough at the Sage Grove Psychiatric Facility in Pennsylvania. And Butcher invites Annie to go along, but really only as their cover and you know, bait for any supers who might show up to try and stop them.
Right. If you got five people running away from a scene and one of them is your billion-dollar asset that just removed their tracking device. I guess that is the show kind of telling us that she is going to be persona non grata as soon as they find this out.
Yeah, I think so.
That they should just be assumed enemy on site. I do love that Butcher and Kimiko scene where they're watching them flirt on camera and be like, they're fucking.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So the Deep goes to Maeve's trailer to tell her that they found some wreckage from the plane, the one that Homeland lasered last season. She tells him not to say a word to anyone if he wants back in the Seven. And I absolutely love the way that he sneaks into this trailer. I don't know if you notice it, but the way he walks in with this big old step, like he's being, I don't know, stealthy. It's ridiculous. The Deep is such an idiot.
It also pairs, like, when he's, because she's like, you know, no one saw you, right? And he's like, oh, no one knows I'm here and what I'm here for. And then the first thing out of his word that has mouth of A-Train, he's like, what are you here for? Oh, I just here seeing my nobody in particular. Like, he is just above Homer Simpson level stupidity. I do love it. I also love him, like, talking about, like, you know, I've been putting a word out to my contacts. And it turns out it's like a rowdy school, a halibut.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. I mean, it's insanely useful. Think about, like, how crazy useful a guy like Aquaman would be to, like, we would solve that down Malaysian airliner in, like, 16 minutes, right?
Oh, yeah.
You just go out there and it'd be like, I don't know, it'd be like watching a film noir detective go into a seedy bar, just going up to a reef, like, hey, what's the scuttlebutt? You know, have you heard anything about a jetliner going down? Any oil slicks out there? Like, I kind of want to see them visualize something like this, him working his contacts, and like, what is a rowdy, like what's a rowdy school of halibut get up to that classifies as rowdy? I would love to see that.
I'm picturing like a Don Knotts, fucking, what is it, Mr. Limpet? Is that the name of the fish that he turns into?
Yeah.
Is it a Disney movie? I don't even fucking remember.
Yeah, it's called The Freaking Fucking Limpet is what they call it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Don Knotts, known for his just foul mouth.
I do love how quickly they're setting up and answering these mysteries, because I was thinking like, oh man, I wonder how long they're going to keep us on the hook for what the hell is on this GoPro looking thing. Not just like another 20-30 minutes. It's good. Yeah, like the mystery of the show is enduring, that they don't have to keep inventing these little mysteries to keep us enticed.
Yeah, and them revealing like what their plan is this episode doesn't say anything about whether or not it's going to work, and like, I don't have high hopes for it, right? You know, Homelander wants to, he'll just laser you. I don't know. It's a dangerous game, but they know that. The other thing that's hilarious in this scene is this pride bar, Brave Maeve pride bar, which, oh God, the cynical way
they can't be
using
proud
her sexuality.
You can't be proud on an empty stomach.
God.
It's pretty bad.
She's vaping too. I don't know if they're trying to do anything with that. She, Maeve's a vapor.
Yeah, just it is wild to see in like a superhero vaping. Mm-hmm. it's kind of, I don't know what it, why, but it is a statement.
Yeah. All right. Ashley shows A-Train a demo of his very own retirement anthem. He gets the stink eye from Stormfront, and then the Deep shows up and conveys his condolences to A-Train over getting kicked out of the Seven. And offers him a Fresca, which I guess is now just code for, hey, I want to talk to you about the cult I'm in.
It's got to have some kind of actual, like, on the border of Compound V. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if these are two joint, like, parallel operations to, like, you know, if you got a disaffected superhero that might like talk a shit or run amok, you co-opt him with this mind control organization and slip him Fresca that might nullify their power somehow. And it doesn't seem like it did that to the Deep, but I don't know. Yeah. Also, bro, you got ass fucked with a soup can. That's fucking the Deep, man. He's full of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, he entices him with the help from a mysterious stranger, which is something that A-Train is interested in. Because there's no way he actually believes that this shit's going to be long-term good for him. He just doesn't want to debase himself in front of fucking Fish Guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, A-Train is proud, you know? Yeah. And he's in a slump at the moment. And he doesn't want to admit it, but that's kind of the way it's going to shake out.
And he might be thinking there might be some still prime money earning years if you're a recent retired guy, and if you play that right, Nike and Under Armour are talking to you. But on the other hand, he doesn't know that they're about ready to jack his whole shtick, and it's really hard to make money as A-Train if someone else is the new better A-Train.
You gonna be B-Train? I don't think so.
No one wants to take the B-Train when the A-Train's sitting right there. You don't want the B-Train shoes. F-Train, what the fuck?
So the boys arrive at Sage Grove, and they decide to leave Starlight outside while Frenchie and Kimiko go inside. And MM as well.
Yeah. Not much here. Like, they're trying to de-weird the situation between Frenchie and Kimiko. And I actually, beyond all expectations, I think they pretty much do.
I agree. Frenchie has some moments of actual understanding and learning in this episode.
Yeah, and he's like, I think it's both. Like, he was thinking with his dick, but also excusing that by thinking he's trying to rescue someone that needs help, and why he personally feels like he's called to do that. And then at the end, just saying a sincere apology and promising to stop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. It's kind of like I thought it was wild that she buys this giant bossy ring and she brings it on the job.
Yeah, why not?
But that
she's got a style. And
it says something about her character. Yeah, she's bossy.
I like it. We'll see where that goes. We have another flashback here to 8 years ago, where Frenchie's caught for this bank heist that he was trying to pull in the first flashback, and he's interrogated by Grace, and she offers him a job and threatens his friends when he refuses, which immediately gets him to change his tune.
And his thing is, which I think they've established or hinted at before, but they make explicit that he does superpowered pharmaceutical bombs, weapons grade Xanax, to take down this guy called Behemoth, who's sound like he's essentially the Incredible Hulk. He gets angry, he gets superpowered, so you pump him full of Xanax, and that calms, that chills his ass out.
Yeah.
And we almost got to see him do one this episode, but it got crushed before it could go off. That's kind of cool. And I think they're establishing me that if you gave Frenchie enough time and chemistry, maybe he could come up with an anti-Homelander bomb that would have a chance of working.
Yeah, I don't think this is the last we've seen of his skills put into action.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, we don't know, like, can... I mean, Superman doesn't even have to fucking breathe, right? If he's out in space and he's got the yellow sun power in him, he doesn't need any of that shit. So, like, I wonder what mechanism you could get Homelander... I guess you could get him to ingest something, maybe. But, I'm curious about how... I think this is a potential puzzle piece for how they're going to, you know, do in Homelander.
So we come back to now, where Homelander wants to surprise Stormfront with something, but she has an appointment, and she leaves, and he rearranges the flower, the surprise he got her. He's clearly like... love struck is not the right word. Enamored with this
infatuated
new relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll see that all play out this episode in spectacular.
And it's like
fashion.
Maybe it's the first time he's thought this might have permanence, like, you know, because it's a superpower person. I did think it was confusing because, like, I was very confused about who those flowers were, whose trailer he was in. I saw the card for Homelander, and I'm like, what the fuck? This might be the first time Homelander's bought a girl flowers.
I have to imagine. Yeah, that's true.
And then, you know, he's like super fucking hyper vigilant and protective. And like when she says, I'll be gone just for 20 minutes. And then you can hear the clock ticking in the background. I knew from that first scene, like, oh, this is going to be trouble.
Yeah. So then we go back to Sage Grove, where Starlight blasts the fence and lets Frenchie, Kimiko, and MM into the grounds. Butcher contemplates firing a sniper round at Annie on her way back.
I mean, it didn't work the last time. Damn.
I know. Well, he doesn't have Huey Huey's on the top of the van, like trying to grab him and ruin his shot.
Yeah. But I do think this is the last time we're going to see him. Like, I feel like there has been progress in the relationship after this episode's over.
Yeah. Yeah, and I
Starlight might blast Butcher, but I don't think Butcher will blast Starlight at this point.
No, I'm just surprised that he didn't realize her value earlier, you know, like in his cynical Butcher way.
Soups,
like,
man.
Having a soup on the team would be an enormous boon.
He's got one, and she doesn't talk. He loves her. There's no emotional entanglements, I guess, to Frenchie. But no, he just fucking hates soups, man. He really does. Like, you know, he's got... That's why it kind of landed before when he's talking to Grace. Like, I don't think he has any compunctions about gutting Kimiko if he has to. He just really pathologically hates the Vought and the supers that they've created.
Yeah. I feel like Kimiko is not a super powerful soup. I don't know why. Like, the idea that you can run maybe a little faster than normal and jump a little higher and heal quickly.
She's strong. I mean, yeah, she's Wolverine. Strong. She's like Wolverine without claws going against Superman. And that's just historically, I mean, Wolverine's willing to do it, but he usually gets all of his skin blasted off and is down to an adamantium skeleton at the end of it.
and I don't think Starlight could take on Superman either, but I think she's more likely to survive longer.
Yeah, definitely could hold him off or sting him, it seems.
Yeah.
Occupy him a little bit anyway.
Her powers have some limitations that we'll see later in this episode, too. But we go inside Sage Grove, where Frenchie gets on a gurney and they wheel him through the facility. Nothing much here.
I thought it was funny Kimiko insisting him being the gurney guy, even though, like... Him and Mother's Milk are pretty good about talking themselves in and out of situations, and she can't talk, or she will not talk, period. So it's like, maybe she should have been the one on the gurney, but she's also the super one, so...
True.
Maybe you want your best weapon like on her feet and not pretending like they're disabled.
Yeah. Annie confronts Butcher about why he's being a dick to her, and she compares him to Homelander, which pisses him off. But before anything can really go down there, Stormfront shows up and distracts them all. This is scary because when I saw someone flying through, I thought A, it was Homelander.
Right.
And B, once I realized it's Stormfront, that's not really any less scary. And what's she doing here?
That could be even worse. Yeah. What do you think? It's a little lazy that Mother's Milk was able to successfully bluff himself into the control room with the old patient on a gurney having a stroke seizure kind of thing. Like,
sure.
There's nothing in this room that can help a patient to swallowing his tongue.
Yeah, and this security guy's what, trained for this? Like,
and he was big. He's this big jack dude. And I actually thought, like, at the beginning, like, oh, this is going to be interesting because they're going to try this. And he's going to be like, get fucked. Take him down to surgery or inpatient or whatever. But you're not getting in here.
Yeah.
And then Kimiko would have to, like, to rip the door off or they would have to try something different. But it just, nah, it worked. And then the dude got taken out. And there you go.
No, I agree. That was a little silly, a little cheap.
A little weak, but then they went for broke on all the super villain powers, like the acid man throwing up, the love sausage guy, which I thought was just going to be a throwaway gag.
Sure.
We'll have to talk.
It was a gag, all right.
I want to save further analysis for that, for the love sausage to come back into play.
Yeah.
But they also established clearly there's this one super. It almost seemed like she was aware that they were watching them. Yeah. And you know, made eye contact. I don't know if that is going to mean anything. Clearly they are building this Cindy, I believe is the character's name, into something, because they really want you to pay attention to the fact that she escaped this facility at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, yeah.
It's like the second time we've seen, you know, Homelander looked at a camera in that exact same way, right? As if he could hear and see
right.
through the camera.
Yeah, maybe it's just like it's tying visually this into, like, this is a Vought Enterprise where everything is being monitored, and it's like this is a naked lab where they're doing experiments, and Becca's home is also a stealth laboratory where they're doing experiments. Maybe that's the thing they're trying to draw.
So then the boys, like you said, kill the security guard. They find a whole bunch of soups being experimented on. They see Stormfront, and Kimiko begins to lose it, and MM calms her. Stormfront's guinea pig demands to talk to her sister, and the nurse lights him on fire with his powers, which mm-hmm. causes Frenchie to realize that he's Lamplighter. Stormfront leaves, and so do the boys. Unfortunately, Lamplighter recognizes Frenchie on the way out, and a soup is released during the struggle that ensues. The soup releases the rest of the soups, and the boys are chased back into the security room as they watch all these soups just go on a killing rampage.
Yeah, you said unfortunately. Like, Frenchie just straight up mad dogged Lamplighter, though.
That
was the opposite of playing it cool, but... You know, they did enough, like I said, they did enough that, like, while that behavior is bizarre and not great from a mission standpoint, I feel like that, yeah, that's Frenchie's, that's part of his character, is that sometimes he does shit that's off mission. He gets he gets emotional. He's not as disciplined, yeah, maybe as certainly Mother's Milk.
He's a passionate guy.
He sure, you know, is.
When he gets angry and when something catches his attention, he goes after it. I think, like, they did, and I'm not even sure they had done enough in this episode yet to make that all sit right with me, but eventually they get there by the end of this episode. So
yeah, it's wild. I would have been very frustrated if they had not cleared up so much of this stuff, because it would have just been bizarre, insane behavior on the part of Frenchie.
Yeah.
Do you think the Cindy character who squeezed a person to death, do you think that's the person that they used to kill Rainer, the person that got their head exploded earlier this?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the effect is very similar.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't go with the full body squeeze rather than just a head squeeze.
I don't know. Maybe her hands were duct taped and she could only get two fingers out.
Just a two finger squeeze.
Uh-huh. I crush
pimple pop. The pimple pop technique.
Right. So Lamplighter eventually agrees to lead them out of the facility as well. And this whole thing takes place with these superpowers you're talking about.
They got all the goods. Like, they stole every hard drive out of this rack. Like, they're going to have like a treasure trove of information that they don't make a big deal about in the episode. But, like, I'm sure next, when they'll be like reviewing and going over all the stuff that they've learned. Like they're very close to blowing the doors off this investigation.
The vertical lids.
The vertical lids. Yep.
Yeah, no, I, as much as like Maeve's plan involves like, oh, I've got this information, this dirt on you, and I'm going to blackmail you. Like, what are they going to do with all this info they've got about these experiments?
It's also really interesting how Vought likes to get matchy-matchy on the Seven. Like, they always have to have a fast guy, right? And we found out this episode, I didn't really fully realize Starlight's powers is that she can't make something from nothing. She has to have a natural source of power to draw from. Yeah. And she's replacing a guy who had to have a natural source of flame. He can't just make it. He can just manipulate it. I wonder if that's, like, true of all... You know, like, do they need to get another new? And they didn't replace the invisibility guy with another invisibility person.
But, I feel like she needs to have an assistant who's like a soup that can like make electricity.
Or can they build like a lipo battery into that costume somewhere? You know, like with the breast padding, the thigh high boots to tuck a couple cells in there. Like, there's some spaces. Yeah. I'm with Butcher. This is a shit superpower if you can be disabled by a field.
Uh-huh.
If a baseball diamond is your greatest weakness, then a football field, a soccer pitch, it's pretty, you're in bad shape.
Yeah, and what is the range on that, right? Like, is it 100 yards? Is it 100 feet? You know?
Seems like it's pretty damn, because they were not that far away from the hospital. Like, yeah, it's within visual range for sure.
And you know, that acid, I guess, vomit is a pretty spectacular effect. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. His face dissolving his own fucking face.
It tells you something about his guts, I guess. Like, his guts must just be made out of something, you know, a lot like our own guts, you know, you put our external skin through prolonged exposure to stomach acids, probably do some damage.
It reminds me of this old episode of The Simpsons where Homer is at a chili eating contest and the Chief Wiggum, I think, has made chili with this ghost insanity pepper. And the only way to eat it is Homer takes like this candle that's on the table that's lit, and he drinks the candle wax to coat his entire mouth and esophagus, and then he's able to eat it. It's like, yeah, this guy, he has to drink a candle before he uses his power, because if anything besides his esophagus touches this acid, it's going to be bad for him.
Yeah.
Weak to your own acid. But I guess that's like part of what Vought's trying to do, is stabilize these powers. It seems like one of the deals is some of these powers are just like, are they even?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like Love Sausage, for example, who we'll be talking about pretty quick. That's not a great superpower.
I mean, he's probably been with a lot of partners who disagree.
There's some applications for it, but like fighting crime or terrorism, not so sure.
So Soup wanders out to where Butcher and Huey are, and Annie, and blasts him with a shockwave before Butcher murders him. And Huey is badly injured in that whole provocation, and Starlight can't help him because there's no power, thanks to the shockwave, and they abandon the other boys to get Huey help.
Yeah. This would have been unthinkable before last episode, that Butcher would, almost sobbing, want to take Huey to the hospital, but it all kind of makes sense now, and he's abandoning his former team for it.
Yeah, that's absolutely the thing that I noticed most in this scene, is when he notices the truck flipped over. He runs over there like, Huey, are you hurt? Are you hurt? Are you okay?
Right, yeah.
Like, he's genuinely concerned. Before last episode, he'd have been like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Would have been the one running over, and he would have been like, oh, he's fine.
He's fine. He's just right. He's no rules, just right.
He's like a blooming onion.
Fried to golden perfection. I do wonder why they are hauling jagged scrap metal around in the back of that van. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, like if there was like a bayonet or like a big sword or something that like Butcher's hauling around, but it just looks like some kind of like thing broke loose and impaled him. Like the van got rolled, right? How did that happen? But whatever, he got hurt.
Yeah, he got hurt. I wasn't questioning it too much.
It's not that kind of show, Jim.
Yeah. Homelander impatiently waits for Stormfront to return and eventually lasers his entire trailer, or at least that's the implication here, I think. Flowers included.
Was it his trailer or her trailer?
I think it's... Oh, actually, that might be her trailer.
But they established this. That's what I'm saying, is these flowers don't make a hell of a lot of sense. Unless he was planning on giving them to her himself, but then why would he send... why would he have the card with the note on it? It's almost like he wanted her to go in and be surprised by it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something that doesn't quite, but you could also excuse it by, like, again, I don't know that this guy knows how giving flowers works or even why you do it. Or
yeah.
So, but yeah, he did burn. I do love the clock ticking motif that, like, just to sell his impatience.
And it's not even a long time, right? It's like 20 minutes or whatever, and he's already
flying
to check up on
her. Yeah, like he's like maybe she's 40 minutes late, but sure.
Yeah, so Stormfront shows back up. He lies about the trailer and lets her know that he's aware that she lied to him about this meeting that she claimed to have. At this point, this is where I start to question. She might be too deep in on this. Like, Homelander might be so unstable. So, I don't know. He might be a lot less stable and a lot less manipulatable than she thinks.
And you know that final look, like, I'm like, is she afraid? Is she concerned? Is she thinking she's in too deep? On second watch, I reinterpreted it as kind of like motherly concern.
Yeah.
With the knowledge of what's going to happen. And I think that's kind of what it is, kind of. But, you know, that's also fucked up. And when you take it in totality, but it is like she's got big Madeline energy and with the physical presence to back it up.
Yeah. Then the Deep and A-Train share a meal with some guy of importance within the Church of the Collective, which turns into a truth exchange after A-Train is coerced into hearing the Deep out.
Yeah, and this guy I recognize. He was the guy that took over as the pediatrician on ER after George Clooney blew up and left.
Huh. Okay. He's got a certain like suave energy.
I really liked him. I was trying to Goran Visinjic is his name.
Huh.
And I haven't seen him on anything since since I stopped watching ER like 20 years ago. But it's really the guy looks amazing and he plays really well this like very charismatic professional almost business manager type cult leader, I thought.
Yeah, is he supposed to be the actual leader? Is he supposed to be like the cat, Miscavige, or whatever his name is?
I think he's exactly what he's supposed to be.
Okay,
like I said, this very intense, almost CEO type church guy.
It's amazing how fast the Deep has run through the ranks here, I guess, of the church. But you would, right? If like, let's assume that he's their first soup that they've been able to indoctrinate. Actually, we know that he's
not
the eagle.
But he's the first big one. Like, they've worked their way up the hierarchy, and now they got a former member of the Seven. But that checks out, because, like, Scientologists, celebrities are fast-tracked through the system. They get preferential treatment. They don't get to see, like, some of the dirt and the dirty stuff. They're shielded from all that. Like, they go to special retreats that are only for them, and the rank and file don't go. If they're there, they're like brainwashed servants or whatnot. So again, I'm not sure why the Scientology commentary. It doesn't seem like it's of a piece with anything else, because it's not like, I mean, maybe it's a nod to the comics, because Scientology did blow up a couple of years ago with the Leah Remini anti-cult diet, but I feel like that kind of like did them in. You know,
did it? I assume they're still operating it.
Yeah, that's true, because I feel like I've been aware of like three or four different times I thought Scientology was kind of done in, and then they just kind of keep doing their thing. So, but yeah, they're I have no idea how the hell this fits in with the larger plot, except if it is some kind of like, what do we do with off the reservation soups that are no longer useful? Can we tie them into this cult kind of thing?
Yeah. And I wonder how it's all going to tie into, you know, taking down Homelander, you know, Maeve's plan. And will, you know, maybe it brings Annie and A-Train somehow together, like with their disdain for these types of structures or something. I don't know. There are hints around the edges of each of these characters that could, you know, tie them together.
Yeah, and you see how effective this pitch is, because it's like ultimate carrot and stick. We have all this dirt on you, but we also have the way to make it go away. And, you know, revealing that they're going to give Shockwave this guy's uniform, and because it's copyright, like, this stuff all is very plausible, you mm-hmm. know.
And it feels like in seven-figure debt was surprising.
Well, I mean, it's I felt like A-Train's always been a little bit of like commentary on athletes, and that's like, I've seen so many documentaries where these guys make $100 million, but they take care of their friends, they take care of their family, they got a cousin that wants to start a barbecue joint or a car wash, and then suddenly like they keep up this lifestyle and they have no plan for what happens when they break they blow out their ACL 5 years before they were supposed to retire, and mm-hmm. or even just retiring, just the idea that like you're not going to be making $15 million a year for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It's all very exploitative. Because the NBA doesn't give a shit about you or the NFL after they're done with you. So there's a lot of that that kind of. But again, that's a big plate. A lot of things are good. Scientology, sports culture,
mm-hmm.
racism in America. Ultranationalism. So there's a big plate, a lot of issues on it.
Yeah.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So then the Sage Grove boys sneak into a supply room where Frenchie admires the drugs. Lamplighter provokes Frenchie, and MM has to split him up. And we flash back to 5 years ago, where MM is announcing to his friends that he's going to get married. His friends being Frenchie, Butcher, and Grace, which, you know, he's colleagues with him at the time. Lamplighter arrives. Grace shows him a video of himself and blackmails him into reporting everything he hears in Vought Tower, especially in regards to Homelander. And Grace is pretty uneasy about this arrangement, so she sends Frenchie to monitor him.
I think this is a great scene because I love, like, Frenchie. Frenchie's very happy for MM. The Colonel's very happy for MM. Butcher is just very Butcher, you know. It's very, good one. All right, real good one. And then also MM's idea of a fun bachelor party is like, you know, Frenchie's like, what do you think about transgender strippers versus like, I was thinking more of like a golf outing. It's, you know, he's MM's like me, except for it'd be board games and video games rather than golf. But,
right. And Lamplighter, when he walks in and his, I looked at him and I was like, God, that is a shitty costume. And then of course that's part of the show, right? Like they're right. immediately going to point out how dumb he looks and.
But they also they put it with like the big kind of DC Marvel swelling music when he like, you know, and slams a staff down. But they immediately like, no, this is stupid. Come on. You can't look like this.
And you got to note, they gave him a fucking flame, right? Like he's got constant access to fire. Why not give Starlight a battery like you said?
She needs a I wonder. Well, no, there's no way that they are not aware of the limits of her powers. They created her. I wonder if like it's like not common knowledge that she needs a source of power to generate him.
Yeah, but, they gotta be.
But I don't know. Like the other thing is like when I first saw this, I'd heard about him burning the children, and I thought it confused me because when they're showing him pictures of stuff, I assumed that that was the incident that they're blackmailing him with, like him accidentally burning children to death. But no. So I wonder like what dirt they did have on these supers and how hard is it to get dirt on supers? Damn. I feel like with Homelander, the way he carries around, like follow him with a camera or drone technology satellite, you'd get a war crime on him in like 15 minutes. This is just daily life. But
and it keeps happening over and over, you know.
Right. It's a pattern. It's clear, like, you know, it should be easy to if all it takes to get a super in line is to have, like, incontrovertible proof of them committing some kind of horrific crime against humanity. Holy shit. Like, TMZ is the kryptonite with these guys.
Yeah, it's why I don't think Maeve's plan is actually going to work out the way she wants it to. Like, you're not getting out of the seven. Homelander's not going to give a shit that you have blackmail material on him. Like,
yeah, I got some thoughts on that when we get there.
Okay.
But, and then like, this is also just like, it tells the tale of Butcher. There's so many people to blame here, but like, you know, Colonel, who's very smart, is worried about what this guy would do without his backs against the wall. Mm. Where Butcher's like, nah, fuck him. We own him. Like, Butcher just is very careless and about pushing the limits and getting to the bottom line.
Because he doesn't have that canary.
Doesn't care. Yeah, doesn't care. Yeah. 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 I guess he kind of cares about Becca, but he probably assumes deep down she's dead. It's all about his vendetta against Homelander, and it gets people hurt and killed.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andy flags down a car, but the driver won't give it up to him. He gets into a showdown with Butcher, and Andy is forced to blast him. And she is pretty distraught over probably killing the guy, but then it turns out she's not. She uses the battery in the car to cauterize Huey's wounds, and they load him in and they take off. And, you know, Annie spots his child seat, which, you know, gives her momentary pause. Like, there's still something rattling around inside her that goes, oh shit, I just did a bad thing. But later on, she professes to not give a shit.
I think she, in the moment, it's like she's realizing she's losing herself, but she still has, like, when everything's said and done, she's like, God damn it, I didn't mean to kill this guy, and oh, God, he had a kid. Mm. But there's also commentary on this, like, this guy pulls a gun, you know, Butcher's got a gun, but either one of these gentlemen could have de-escalated the situation. I would say it's probably on Butcher to do so, but instead, they kept escalating it until, you know, one of them ended up dead. I don't think you need a lot of commentary on that.
Yeah, Butcher. Like, just the way he approaches trying to commandeer this car, like, oh, I'm FBI. Left me ID and me out of pants. Like, that's not how you do it. You just let the guy drive you. Why wouldn't you let the guy drive you?
Yeah, because he didn't want to. They were paranoid about Starlight being recognized, I guess, is the justification for that. That he's like, hey, don't I recognize you? And like, I don't know. Guy's in the wrong place at the wrong time.
It's true. Out in the middle of nowhere. Okay, Frenchie MacGyver's a knockout bomb for Supes out of the chemicals in the storage room. Frenchie asks why the Seven left them alive after what happened 5 years ago. It's because Lamplighter never told the Seven about the stuff that they did. Lamplighter claims that he actually didn't know that there were going to be kids there when he torched them in this incident that we're getting to.
Yeah, he meant the roast the colonel, and it turns out she was having a sleepover with her grandkids, but she was gone. I don't know. It's a weird situation. I was when he was describing this, I'm like, this is a very sad scene, but I was actually literally trying to decide how the hell could it have happened. Like, they're sleeping in grandma's bed, but she's not there, and neither's grandpa. Where the hell was she?
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Kids got roasted, screaming. Very sad, very distraught.
She went out for a fresca. Came back, roasted kids.
For Fresca. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a Fresca in the world to put those flames out.
Fresca and an Alma Joy. She just went down to the corner store.
Serves her right.
Lamplighter claims that, or he wants to know why Frenchie didn't stop him. So does M.M., frankly. And then we flash back to Frenchie abandoning his mission to follow Lamplighter when Sherry calls him and says that his friend is ODing. He goes and he saves the guy, but he has to make this tough decision about leaving in order to get back to his mission, which, you know, his friends are disappointed with the decision he makes, which is to go back on mission.
Yeah, he just shoots him full of Narcon and scoots, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all it took. It makes me wonder if Lamplighter was waiting for him to break, you know, because he was aware of being followed. And the second that he broke off, he's like, oh boy, here's me killing again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you think you could maybe tell Sherry how to administer some of that Narcon stuff, but...
You saw how Pulp Fiction goes. You can't trust people just have a firm stabbing motion on the... Yeah.
They get it right. They just read like a pamphlet and do it. It works.
Sure. I do think it's also something about like the nature of his powers. Like, can you imagine? Like, that's got to be... I've always thought this about people with flame powers. How can that possibly be good? Like, you can't subdue people with flames. You can light them on fire and they die screaming. That's got to be... Imagine if your superpower is just excruciating people to death. Like, that's all, you know, you essentially could just electrocute them. Like, that's not a good superpower. Having super strength where you can, like, treat them like you can treat grown men like toddlers and just physically separate them and you're invulnerable. Like, that's a power that you could do inherent good with. Flames? What the fuck can a flame do? What about purify? Purge? That's the best of it. You're still the people dying screaming.
Mm-hmm. What about the threat of flames? Like, if they know you can use flames and you threaten them, then maybe some good could come of that. You never actually use your power, but they know you got
it. Then as soon as someone calls your bluff, it's you're back to the dying screaming.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about Dr. Manhattan, or like this Cindy superhero. It's like the full body explosion. It looks grotesque, but it is like it's a pretty instant painless death. And it's just like, deatomization, you know, like why dress it up? Why are you with those funny like storms electrocuting people? Pyro guy is burning them alive. I'm just going to full body explosion. They just cease to exist. Boom.
Are you saying that all these soups are really just like their generic superpower is murder?
Yeah. And it's like, which vicious type of murder do you want to specialize in?
Yeah.
You know, like fair. There's not. Yeah. Yeah. Their superpower is super murder.
Yep. All right. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're not wrong. Up,
man. Can't be normal.
So with Huey passed out, Butcher tries to comfort Annie over killing that guy, but Annie's not fazed by it. She doesn't want his consolation, nor does she want his admiration or approval. She's kind of disgusted by the fact that she's winning Butcher over with her apathy toward killing.
And this is a stock scene that they again subvert the tough guy, you know, the innocent, normal, being corrupted by the rough and ready, you know, The only thing that lets people sleep at night is rough and ready men and women ready to dispense justice, like her rejecting that too. Like, no, I see you trying to give me that like manly nod of masculine approval and fuck you and fuck all that. Because also, if you hadn't have been the way you are, none of this would have happened. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to argue with that because that's something that even Becca said. Like, this is just who you are. You can't. You can't just back off and play it cool.
Yeah. All right, Frenchie finishes this knockout bomb. Lamplighter explains that Vought is trying to stabilize Compound V to work on people who aren't babies, adults, essentially. He doesn't know why they're doing it, though. Frenchie explains he didn't stop Lamplighter because he had to leave to help his friend who was ODing, and that friend only lived for another few months and then died of an OD anyway. A tentacle comes in through the window, which immediately, I'm like, okay, well, the boys isn't going to use a tentacle unless it's some perverse kind of tentacle. And once you see the head of this tentacle, I think everybody knew what was up.
I did not realize. I'm just like, oh wow, a tentacle comes and grabs MM, and it wasn't until like I heard Kimiko knock a guy out, and then it slowly like retracted. I'm like, oh god, that's a super dick.
It is. Yeah, it turns out MM's grabbed by a super dick. They make their way out, but they run into Cindy the Soup, who defuses their grenade, which I'm not sure how that works. We'll maybe talk about it. Stormfront shows up calling for Lamplighter, and he reveals himself and explains what happened, leading her away from the rest of the boys. How does stomping on a canister full of gas that is meant to knock you out and rupturing that canister prevent the bomb from working?
The only thing I can think of is it required some kind of like charge or something to mix, and by crushing it, the chemistry didn't work right. But I had the same kind of like, crushing a bomb disables it. I mean, it would like if it's C4, right? Because C4 is like inert unless it's hit by a very particular type, type of electricity or whatnot. Like you can like squeeze and pound and whatever C4 Yeah, like you could definitely do that, but like, yeah, something homemade chemically, gas knockout.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. She should have just flicked it down the hallway. Like, use her manipulation powers to kick it away.
She can only crush, never throw.
So, I mean, the idea here of what they're trying to do at Sage Grove of making Compound V stable enough to inject into adults is that. Is that just to increase the number of soups they can have? You know, the millions that Stormfront is going to talk about at the end of this episode? Or is this like a personal thing that maybe Stan Edgar is doing because he wants superpowers? Or
I don't know what they're playing at. I do not know what they're playing at. I don't know what Stan Edgar is like, because you see this all the time. They played with this on what was that movie or the David Simon production about the 1930s and 40s America? No.
Oh.
It's about the plot against America, right?
Yep.
This kind of like minority who somehow thinks that they can gain the favor of the majority and maintain in their, you know, like the American Jew that wants to talk real about allying with Hitler because, you know, it's like that kind of thing. Like, is Stan Edgar a guy who thinks that a person like Stormfront will ever accept him as an equal as long as he goes along with their evil ideology?
Right. Like, that's my number one question is why. And it makes me, you know, it leads to other questions as in like, you know, okay, maybe that's Vought's mission from the start, but is that still Vought's mission as a company? Are they still on this race war thing, or are they, you know, have they gotten past that and maybe Stormfront is just the only one still holding that candle lit?
She wants to get the family business back to its original roots, but it's just hard to tell because, like, you know, it's real life is littered with these examples. For example, the guy who ran Hitler's brown shirts division was openly gay and somehow thought that was going to save him, and then he found that wrong in the Night of the Long Knives. The first purge, he was up against the wall getting shot. So it's like,
yeah,
it happens. Like they think that you know, that they think that they're going to be the exception, and then once the power is consolidated, no longer have a useful role to play. Well, there's a straight white Aryan person who can serve this role, Stan Edgar. We don't need you anymore.
So does Stan think he's just smarter? He's smart enough to avoid that fate, or does he?
I don't know, because there's a lot of theories about why that is. Like, there's some kind of like self hatred there. It's like if you're a gay person, you're like, I'm gay, and that's not fine. But these other gay people who are acting this certain way or doing this thing that upsets me, they're the problem. And if we could just control, whereas they don't understand that no, everyone else just really hates gay people, or like Jews or any kind of like minority that you can kind of lasso around and put a label on and stitch a symbol on their sleeve. Like that's yeah. There's always
outsiders.
Yeah, yeah. Like the character of Steven, wasn't that the Samuel L. Jackson character in Django? You know, Candy's right hand. Like, there's always a person that is willing to support the system, even though it's in their not in their self interest for some crazy psychological reason.
Stan Eggers, the ultimate Uncle Tom. Is that what you're saying?
Like, yeah, or is he gonna peel his skin off and it's like Darth Vader? You know, this proud black spaceman takes his armor off and it's just an old sad white guy at the middle. Like I don't know.
His superpower all along has been to change the color of his skin. That's what it is.
Yeah, he's the chameleon. Sure. I don't know. There's different ways they could go with that.
The chameleon is Australian slang for something terrible also.
Oh, yeah. Don't even want to look it up on the Australian Urban Dictionary, which is called just the Australian Dictionary.
Okay, they get Huey to the hospital, but he needs a couple of days of recovery. Annie and Butcher talk about the things they love about Huey, some of them which are pretty embarrassing. Like him using kid shampoo and Axe body spray and butt rash cream. pretty good scene here. I liked it.
Well, it was embarrassing. Okay, like kid shampoo with Axe. Okay.
Yeah.
Putting butt cream on if you got butt acne? What's wrong with that?
I'm with you. There's no shame in butt rash cream. I think it's a combination. Just like... This is clearly a very childish man, if you can call him.
Mixed
that.
In with like 65-year-old man habits too. Like, you know, you can see your grandpa's putting on butt cream, but plus the conflicting scents. I'm thinking like you mix kid shampoo and an Axe body spray and like Ben Gay or something like that. That's not what the hell is that? That is, I don't know. That's nothing good. That's not natural.
That's Huey by Calvin Klein.
It's Huey's natural musk.
So then Maeve's in the shower and Elena accidentally snoops her way into viewing this video of Homelander lasering the plane, and she is traumatized by Maeve's involvement.
Yeah, I mean,
for good reason. And you can see like Maeve trying to talk through this, right, and realizing that everything she's saying just sounds worse every time she says something. It's like, oh no. No, I can see how to someone who wasn't in the situation and doesn't rationalize it the way I do, that's fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a person who has inched tip, you know, like an inch at a time towards hell and has rationalized it the whole way, looking back at a person 5 miles back on the road and being like, it all makes sense if you live through it. Like, no, you just, it's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, so is that the end of their relationship, you think, or... Because we don't really see any more this episode.
It better be something transformational. Like, I don't know if it has to be the end, because I think you can get past that. But, like, Maeve's going to have a lot of work to do because, you know, the way that Maeve told the story to Elena, right? Maeve was very much the victim. Mm-hmm. But she left off all the victims that she has created herself through her own, like, you know, compliance, not standing up to Homelander.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, again, you be the person that tells Homelander to go fuck off. But it's got to be chilling for Elena.
Yeah. And I it's sad, too, because in a way they're getting to some kind of new normal in their relationship, right? Like I don't think they're living together necessarily, but there's like this comfort and this ease with her in the shower and Elena's just hanging out. And
seem like they might have moved in with each other though.
Maybe. There's always like
open now, right?
Other shoe that I'm waiting to drop for Homelander to drop. But in the meantime, there was some semblance of normalcy here and I was starting to enjoy it during the scene.
Irrelevant detail. Was she trying to postmate something called sugarfish? What is sugarfish?
I don't know.
Like, I assume that they're talking Swedish fish. And I'm like, man, that's a frivolous thing. But like, also, why wouldn't you just call it Swedish fish? Like, you're suddenly shy about shitty candy brand names now. Couldn't get the license for Swedish fish.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I didn't bother.
If you know what sugarfish is, please send it in to dhs@baldmove.com because I have no fucking clue.
It's probably Australian and it's probably dirty. Okay. Let's move on to MM getting word that Huey's okay. Frenchie apologizing to Kimiko for trying to save her, essentially to absolve himself of his own guilt. And he says that he'll leave her alone now. And then Grace rolls up and they show her lamplighter. She pulls her gun out to try and kill him. But Frenchie, I don't know. She clearly doesn't want to shoot him. She feels like she needs to shoot him for some sort of justice. Frenchie's able to talk her out of killing him, proposing that they use him instead.
Yeah. I realized this whole episode I've been trying to think who the fuck, where I've seen light lamplighter before. And I finally looked it up. His name's Sean Ashmore, and he played, ironically, Iceman in like the first three X-Men movies. The ones that had Anna Paquin as Rogue.
Yes, he did. Okay.
Yeah, he's all grown up and now he's playing a fireman. Isn't that wild?
Playing against type, huh?
He is playing against type. I love Frenchie's apology to Kimiko because it's a great one. It's not. It's like, this is what I did. This is why it was wrong and why I could have hurt you. And I'm not going to do it anymore. And also, like, when he's like, I'll leave you alone now. Like, she gave a pretty complex performance that's like, maybe that's not what she wants at this point. You know, maybe she's ready to pursue things with Frenchie.
Yeah, but him and leaving Frenchie, it in that place is really good because it's now up to her. Right. Like, he's,
yeah, it's the ball's back in her court.
Yeah.
And she can play it at her own pace. Mm-hmm. Also, Frenchie just like yelled in the background, tell him about the thick penis around your neck. Like, this is so funny.
It's like nothing. It's just Frenchie talking shit.
Yeah. It's just Frenchie. You know how he is.
Yeah. I picture Butcher on the other end going, thick penis. What's that about?
Mm hmm. Mm hmm. So, what are they going to do with Lamplighter now?
That's a good question. That they have him.
I guess a man on the inside of this forest grove or whatever is a sage grove is not a bad thing.
That and another soup on the team.
Plus, I was really surprised to see that he was able to successfully fool Stormfront, you know, into like, oh, no, it's just, you know, we got our meds mixed up and some of the inmates were able to escape, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess at this point you recreate the mission from 5 years ago, right? And have Lamplighter report everything he can from Stormfront since they're, you know, chummy.
Because I imagine he doesn't have access to the Seven anymore. He's probably kind of like the Deep in that way. But like, yeah, he's got real good access to the Sage Grove business.
Yeah.
But then again, they got so much. They got all the hard drives and shit. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, keeping them, you know, up to date,
you're right,
on what Stormfront's doing, I think.
It's a going concern. I wonder if there'll also be a scene where like they realize that they've been compromised and they tell Lamplighter to just burn it all down, and that gives them an opportunity to maybe turn a couple super you get love sausage on your side.
God.
Sure. Yeah. No, that's another one. Because I feel like that's what Vought would do. It's like, oh my God, these people came in, stole all of our shit. They got all this data on us. Let's just fucking liquidate this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Stormfront tries to apologize to Homelander by promising never to lie to him again and showing him pictures that prove that she's Liberty and that she doesn't age. She declares that everything Vought has done since the creation of Compound V has been part of a race war. And Homelander is the culmination of their dreams. And that works on Homelander. He's turned on by that and he kisses her.
That's exactly what he wants. Like, this is like his metaphorical mother saying that you are the true legacy of everything I fought for. I'm so proud of you. I love you completely. And he also can have sex with her. Mm-hmm. And he can't hurt her, or at least like accidentally as easily as other people. Like, this is like literally his perfect...
And I mean, I've talked about a lot of the implications here already, about this race war that's going on and how that recasts sort of the Shining Light Liberation Army as, you know, some counter, you know, they already were sort of some resistance underground cell sort of thing, but now even more so now that I know it's a race war. And it kind of explains why maybe they were experimenting on Kimiko and her brother. Like, they're probably not gonna give superpowers to a bunch of white dudes, right?
What do you think? Because like the other thing, they've let the Ryan situation go for a couple episodes. Do you think that Homelander's just gotten bored with him? Because I imagine that this is something Stormfront might instigate, like, you know, that you got to, you know, we got to get this kid on our side, or we got to raise him right or something. I don't know how they're going to get back to that story plot, because it feels almost like abandoned.
Yeah, I mean, but, I think it could be a situation where Homelander decides that he and Stormfront are going to be Ryan's new parents. Like, Becca's out of the picture now.
The thing that ties them together, she said essentially exactly his pitch to Ryan, like, that, hey, none of us have to be alone ever again now. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, you know, that was like what Homelander was trying to do with Ryan. It's wild. And then the Golden Girls theme playing over it was just the icing on the cake for sure.
Did you stick around long enough to hear the A-Train anthem after the Golden Girls?
No, I didn't. When did that start up?
They play that whole thing out and it's bad. It's like the most soulless, lifeless rap pop.
Did they get Lil Nas X to do it, or is it still the, like, schlubby guy?
It sounded vocals. Like it was a schlubby guy, and maybe Starlight singing the you know, sung part of the.
So this is track, over the credits.
I don't know.
Was this over the credit scene, or is it actually transitioning? Okay, yeah, I didn't pay attention to that, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's,
but they also established
ridiculous.
They also established a Cindy character hitchhiking. Wonder what's going to go on with that.
I don't know.
I mean, it's like, seems powerful if you need someone to be exploded from visual range, but, you know, it's not something that's going to, like, be the thing for Homelander, right? Like, what are they doing? There doesn't seem there's any shortage of super terrorists. Like, what is the whole point of this? Other than to establish Vought's plan to have a race of or a whole legion of super soldiers for the race war to come that they're engineering.
Yeah, and how, you know, stable or unstable is she? Is she gonna last out there? What's her mental state? So many questions about it.
Yeah, I looked into, because I thought I recognized her from I recognized this actor from Orange is the New Black, but it turns out not that they've done a lot of stunt work. And in fact, on they're credited with a bunch of stunts in the season one of the Boys. And they also do a bunch of art exhibitions, like really high end, like weird gothic performance art, like dancing, but you're in a vacuum bed. It's like I said, bizarre stuff. Their name is, oh shit, I forgot. I didn't write down her name.
Oops.
It's like Edgar Moser, something really Scandinavian sounding.
Okay.
But
that's it.
Look forward to seeing what they do in the future.
Same here.
Okay. You ready to do some feedback, Jim?
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm opening up the feed bag. If you want to get some stuff in here, you send it to DHS@baldmove.com. That's Department of Homeland Security. DHS@baldmove.com, and we can consider your feedback for the next week's podcast. First up, Josh from Philly. Just a quick aside, the lovers, the woman the Deep was interviewing mentions. You remember this? This is the two people, and I think Pompeii, the skeletons, hugging each other. Were genetically tested and found to be two men. It's just our culture's heteronormativity that had them referred to as a man and a woman. That's interesting. Which I think it's the kind of stuff that the Boys likes to play with. Although I also wonder, like, it's also entirely possible they're not even aware of that, and, you know, but I don't know. They probably are. So also, Mother's Milk's t-shirts that I've been talking about enjoying is from a real company here in Philadelphia called Philadelphia Printworks. It's owned and operated by a black woman and has a lot of cool stuff, including the Black Panthers tee. It's philadelphiaprintworks.com. Thanks and love the show. I appreciate that. I don't know. I don't know if getting away with it is the proper term to use. I don't know if I can pull off a Black Panther Party t-shirt.
Sure.
I need to get something John Brown. Some kind of John Brown t-shirt going. If you know who John Brown is, that's your homework assignment tonight. Look him up.
Okay. I guess I got homework.
Pretty righteous dude. Josh P. says, hey guys, I found it interesting that Homelander doesn't seem to understand Becca or Ryan when they speak in Spanish at the breakfast table. Mm-hmm. I instantly flash back to early season one where Homelander tells Stillwell that he is still the most recognized man on Earth. He says something to the effect of, I can land anywhere in the world and people say Homelander in perfect English. Yes, he's smart and diabolical, but he's so far up his own ass that he doesn't take the time to relate. He skates on the fact that he's powerful and loved, yet two people speaking another language leaves him out of the loop. First, I thought the sign language Kimiko and her brother made up would play a part in taking down Homelander, but that theory is shot. I still somehow think that this will come into play in his downfall. I mean, pride goeth before a fall. I mean, that's a cliche for a reason. But it is like, the deeper we get in, like some of the stuff that was subtext is like really textual with Homelander. Like,
You look at, it's not even that he says perfect English, he says perfect American. And the idea that like he's, you know, wants this to be about saving America, and all of these, you know, super terrorists are foreigners outside of America.
No super terrorists born in America, that's for sure.
Right. So yeah, I think like if having Spanish spoken in front of him is his weakness, then he'd probably be taken down pretty easily. Like, I mean, you don't even need code words, right? It's just...
Yeah, trap him at a General Assembly of the United Nations. Have everybody start saying, you know, stuff all at once, and he just melt into a puddle of red, white, and blue goo.
Right.
Apparently. But I don't know. It's an interesting theory that you had. I guess now she's the sole remaining speaker of this language. I don't know if they can if they can make something with that, but we'll see. Taylor says, I have a prediction for all the internet points in regards to Stormfront's fate. Although I find it likely that Homelander will end Stormfront out of random spite. I mean, that's always a chance. That's always a chance. Did we talk about this? Do you think it's impossible for Homelander to kill Stormfront because he lasered her tits and it didn't kill her?
No, I don't. I think he was still holding back. I also think it did damage her. Whereas if he got lasered by her powers, I don't think it would do anything.
Yeah. I mean, it might throw him back or something, but it's not going to like, because I got the feeling that like if he even kept that laser vision going for another 10, 15, 20 seconds, that it might incinerate her heart and then regenerate from that, you know, kind of thing. But I think we're in agreement on that anyway. And he can end anyone out of spite. Like, he does not have a very wide disconnect between the lizard side of his brain and the higher function side. Nothing, despite the fact that it might end up like that, Homelander ending her in random spite, nothing would make me happier than to see Kimiko take that racist bitch down. I predict by the end of the season, Kimiko will either take down Stormfront with the aid of Frenchie, or her and Frenchie will make an attempt that will end both of their lives. Unfortunately, in the boys' world and often in our own, monsters are not always shamed for their evil to others, so I predict that Kimiko and Frenchie will be labeled as terrorists, even though they're the ones that destroy Stormfront. Would love to hear your opinions.
Terrorist again. Damn it.
Yeah, the only problem I have with that theory is that it's like double secret probation. Like, they're already internationally wanted terrorist for this, so this would just be another crime. Now, I guess with Stormfront mastery of memes and like master getting your uncle Billy to share that shit on Facebook, maybe she would be arguably more beloved than Translucent, especially in certain, you know, like segments of the American politics and society. So like, it might make and you know, like, it's shit. I mean, there's things you can say to inflame a situation, things you can say to cool a situation down. And it seems like in the boys' world, they're just going full blown inflammatory. So even without that, like, the last 6 months of the boys' universe seem like it's a lot more volatile than it was before. So, I don't know. Maybe it'll make him even more wanted. Because I do think that there is a little element of that the boys as a group kind of run around not really feeling like they are America's number one enemy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I feel you. If you can meet on a street in broad daylight, I don't think you feel enough like you're, you know, the most wanted.
Yeah, like Osama bin Laden could not ever have walked down a random street in New York City and not immediately been torn apart by crowds, let alone people like calling in and have him arrested. So,
right, or cameras picking him up, things like that.
So maybe they could ramp up the tension and be like, okay, no shit, the boys are actually persona non grata now. But right. We'll see. No, I would like to see. Obviously, I'd like to see the boys take him down. Although it's also something satisfying if the supers start turning on themselves, you know.
Sure.
Then the seven have their night of long knives where they purge all the people that aren't pure to the cause, and it's going to be whatever Homelander probably judges. Mm-hmm. Finally, we have Jasmine, who says, I'm so glad you guys are covering the boys. It's been a little strange hearing the two of you discuss a show based on a previous work without at least one of you having been a quote-unquote book reader. That is kind of our shtick. But I've recently finished the whole series right when season 2 dropped. I found it twisted, graphic, and has some very sick moments. Some drawn so well it literally had me shook. But it's also hilarious and at times heartfelt, and I highly recommend it. She has a couple of questions and points of view between changes they've made in the between the book and the show, and she says they're not spoilers, and I read them through. They don't seem to be. She wanted kind of our opinion on them. So the following questions are not spoilers. They're more like pointing out where the show has gone in a complete opposite direction from the comics. For example, changing a character's gender or killing someone who didn't get killed, etc. So Butcher doesn't have an aunt in the comics. I think it makes sense to have someone give some glimpse of his family background because he's not the sharing type. I mean, I'm assuming that they still have the backstory with him and Huey because that seems so vital to understanding the season. And yeah. I'm assuming in a comic they just probably had a comic where Butcher is young Butcher and young Lenny, and we saw what happened, and they chose not to do that this way, and they just had the aunt do it. In one scene. So
yeah, I mean, you can certainly do that. Like, I love flashbacks. There are shows that use them all the time. Like Lost used a flashback almost every week. It never felt old, but I wonder as a writer if you get tired of doing like, oh, here's another flashback every week. Maybe they want to experiment with other ways to tell this story.
Yeah. Then she moves on and says, Stormfront in the comics is a male superhero and is much more of an overt Nazi type. The cover art of one of the comics shows him with a literal swastika on his cape. Do you think they made her a woman to be able to pull off the I'm just asking questions, innocent yet still racist white woman act, or maybe to have a sexual relationship with Homelander?
That's what I was wondering. Like, that totally changes whatever relationship they must have had, right?
Well, I mean, that's what I think I asked this in the last pod. Like, I had heard that they had gender bent Stormfront, and this show being, or the comic being as subversive as its reputation, it's like, and you know, as much as it pains me to say that this is subversive, it is pretty subversive to have like male on male graphic sex. Like, in fact, we just, I can think of two instances where I've seen it. Like, in an episode of American Gods like 3-4 years ago, and this week on Lovecraft Country, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, so it sounds like that's just something they added, which is it's a big add to make two characters kind of lovers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
as far as Stormfront being more overtly racist, I forget who said it, but someone said that like if fascism ever comes to America, it will be draped in the American flag and bearing the cross. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that Americans would not accept swastikas and all that kind of stuff, but like if you cloak it with the flag and the and religion, then it'll be more palatable. So I actually find I don't know, like this commentary is already pretty fucking on the nose. Having the Stormfront character be a swastika that gets a huge social media following, that might be a little much. So mm-hmm. probably a good change. Plus you can air it in Germany without having to do any censoring. Stillwell in the comics is a man and not Madeline. It's James Stillwell. He's cold, calculating.
Does Homelander have any of the attributes of Homelander in the comics? Because those are like his two defining features. Like he's a straight heterosexual male, like, you know, alpha male, and he's got mommy issues that are like us. And Stormfront becomes a stand-in for those things. Wow, that's different.
Yeah, no, Jasmine's saying the same thing. I'm still trying to figure out why they added the Oedipal complex to this thing with Stillwell as his fixation. Other than serving to make him even creepier or psychotic, I'm not sure what it'll mean for the story. And will he turn that fixation to Stormfront instead? Probably on the latter, but yeah, like that's another genuinely shocking thing to me, because it does seem like it's built into his character. It informs his relationship with Becca and Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, like, goddamn, that's a huge departure, it seems like.
Okay. Well, I guess see what they have in store. Like, I obviously haven't read these comics, so I'm not going to start, you know, complaining, oh, they didn't do this or they did this differently.
Right.
I'm just invested in what they're doing. And what they're doing so far is great. So,
especially since it seems like it's making the situation more interesting. Like, you know, Stillwell was all those other things, like cold, calculating, manipulator, not afraid of Homelander. Mm-hmm. It's just now, you know, the way she did it was her kind of like mommy sexuality.
I wonder if they're doing,
or at least that was her weapon of last resort.
You think they're doing more of the Stillwell stuff with Stan Edgar? Or they will be doing more of that stuff in the show?
I'm assuming that Stan Edgar's probably a character in the show or in the comic books as well. Could so be. Like, I don't know. And then finally she says, from what I gathered in the comics, Vought American is more of a Raytheon or Northrop Grumman mixed with Disney type of place, a defense weapons contract with the division, similar to Marvel laundering the comics, books, movie franchises, and actual superheroes. I thought it was interesting when Stan Edgar told Homelander that they were a pharmaceutical company before a superhero company, and I'm wondering what that means. Are they going to try to sell V as a drug to our military instead of actual superheroes themselves? That might be a budget deal, because they would have to establish superheroes to sell off to the military, where, you know, you can have the same effect where you just pass a suitcase full of, you know, green vials and get the same kind of point across. Plus, like, there is a little bit of, like, I think there's a little bit of, they just throw the kitchen sink into these cultural analysis, and, you know, there's a lot of hate in the pharmaceutical
there's
a lot of hate towards pharmaceutical, big pharma, right, for, you know, patenting things that could advance the human race or, you know, provide cures for things cheaper and better. Like, you know, why do we have to pay $1,200 for an EpiPen? Why do we have to pay $1,000 for months of supply of insulin? Something that costs pennies to make. Like, there's a lot of that, and I think it's just another thing that they added to the stew.
Yeah.
But anyway, really appreciate all everyone's feedback. Again, if you'd like to send us some questions or make commentary of your own, theories, whatever, send that in to dhs@baldmove.com, and we'll consider it for the next podcast. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you next episode.